having somebody involved in these, especially these very large, expensive projects, who has already experienced success with the technology, experienced success with that kind of project, and who has already seen the finish line and what it feels like to flip the switch, turn it on, it's in production and in use. And what does that do? That gives a lot of confidence to the team.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nessel & Associates, Dr. Jack Nessel.
Hey, Jack here. Thanks, listeners, for tuning in again. If you find value in the content we bring here on the ERP OCJ, please consider sharing with friends and colleagues. It would be greatly appreciated. Regarding today's show, ERP organizational change efforts are complex, requiring sound IT management, IT expert knowledge, systems integration and development, and so on. ERP systems themselves are information technology supporting and advocating for a competitive advantage by creating organizational intellect. ERP systems can deliver a powerful business advantage, but considerable evidence suggests that ERP organizational change efforts often significantly underperform against expectations. And that's why we are bringing you our next guest. In this episode, we discuss ERP organizational change technology strategy with Mr. Russ Finney. Russ teaches technology and business strategy, and he has also worked hands-on in the corporate world, making him uniquely qualified. Let's dive in. In general, at the highest level of categorization, there seems to be consensus on the importance of people and culture, informational technology, and project management for successful ERP implementation. However, these are broad categories. Furthermore, research has not reached consensus as to which specific factors are most significant and critical towards ERP organizational change success. In this episode, we would like to focus on IT and technology management and offer some tactical tips, provide some practical guidance, and discuss IT and ERP strategy. Please join us as we examine the definition of IT success, implementation success rates in general, politics and information, the value of IT vision, the power of belief during IT implementations, the most critical components of building an effective IT strategic business and technology roadmap, and the value of proper ERP system selection. Joining us from Austin, Texas, Russ, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Before we get started, if you could further introduce yourself to our listeners, please, we'd appreciate it.
Okay. Well, these days I'm at the University of Texas at Austin, Macomb School of Business, so I've become an academic. But that was after years of service as an IT executive, and also I was a consultant, and I've worked with a number of the name brand consulting firms. I actually started my career with Ernst & Young back when they were getting going with IT consulting. It was really good. But these days I'm teaching and I'm also involved in advisory and research and all that sort of thing. But my teaching centers around MIS. So I teach core MIS classes at the university. That's really all about how businesses use technology and kind of the leading trends around MIS. And I also teach capstone classes, and those are for our seniors that are graduating. A lot of our students go out into the world as consultants. So about 50% of the graduates from our university get hired by the large advisory firms like McKinsey or Accenture, KPMG, and the firms that you know very well. And they actually go out and work on ERP. So I feel like I get to shape their thinking a little bit around these topics. It's a lot of fun. And then I also do a lot of writing still, and I know you found a few of my writings out there. We'll talk about those during this interview. And involved in researching, but mostly I'm thinking about frameworks and frameworks for large organizations to do these technology projects and be successful. So we'll talk about some of those too. Another thing, I have served as an executive. The longest stretch was 18 years, believe it or not, as a VP of IT. And that was in the semiconductor industry. And I didn't want to leave because it was so much fun to be in technology. And that's when all the chips were growing and capabilities and that sort of thing. It was so much fun being in that world. Now, I already mentioned I've been a consultant. I still go back and forth. Even today, I do advisory work. So I'll use some of those as frame of reference.
Well, sounds like great experience for us, and we're really looking forward to sharing out some of that expertise and experience with our listeners today. So, Russ, the first question for you today is, how would you define success for an IT department in general in terms of bringing value to a business? And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, is within an information technology department, you have the people, processes, and technology that need to all be coordinated and function in such a way that they're bringing this, the greatest return on investment to the organization. So what would you say to that? How would you define success of an IT department?
You know, one thing I did is I did go out, Jack, and listen to some of the other podcasts that are on the website. There was a lot of good answers to this question, and I was very impressed by the insights. So I think in my case, instead of being academic about it, I'm going to talk more direct about some of the mindsets and approaches that I think businesses should be taking around this value question or the success of an ERP implementation and that sort of thing. But I will tell you that I'm very fortunate because I get to visit companies pretty often, and I get invited in, surprisingly, by the business side more frequently than the IT side. So it may be a business executive or a team that feels like, oh, we're struggling, or we've got this project that's struggling, or just overall, we're worried about our IT capabilities. And I get to visit. And so one of the first things that I'll do is take a look at what is on the list of projects that are maybe being curated by the project management office. So a lot of big organizations have PMOs. And my question generally is, what's the basis for this thing that I'm seeing on this list? Where did this come from? Oh, it came from this lunch that I had with this executive and we worked it out on the back of a napkin. Or we have this suggestion box and it came through, and so we got to document all those and track them. But many times I'll find that it's coming in through these random pathways, and it doesn't really feel connected back to the business mission so much. And then I'll also get to visit with the C-suite and the C-suite executives. And I'll ask them, how effective do you think your IT department is? Or how effective do you think the consultants are that are working with your group? And what I'm learning is there may be training opportunities out there for business executives to learn how to use their IT group more effectively. So I'll find all the way from very hands-off, we trust them, they're doing whatever they're doing, we don't really understand what they're doing, but our business seems to work, all the way to the very hands-on, hey, this is really strategic and we need their help. And we're side by side, shoulder to shoulder on these projects. But back to the value, for me, it all begins with the core mission and the vision of the business. So, you know, those fluffy vision mission statements that you'll see on websites, I actually like to go read them and see where's this business going and what is it that it's trying to do. So I think it all starts with the mission and the vision. And then next is the outcomes that the executives are trying to reach. And so what's an outcome? It might be, we need this e-commerce capability. We don't have it and we need to make it. And it needs to be in this time frame. Or we need better analytics. Or we need maybe some AI labor saving capabilities or some supply chain connectivity or optimization, whatever it might be. But I feel like those outcomes, those things that the business is building or that they're adding on or they're maybe modifying an ERP or adding more capabilities, those things need to be outlined and defined by the business to achieve the mission. And then going a level deeper on that, that should drive out some actions. For me, it's more business to-do lists. I think actions are business items. And then lo and behold, there's going to be items on there that technologists need to get involved in. And some of those might involve creating a project around an ERP system or some technology foundation. It could be anything, QuickBooks, NetSuite, Oracle, SAP, any of those platforms that businesses are using. But both sides should have actions to reach these outcomes or to reach the vision, the business side and the technology side. So for me, back to the answering the question, the value comes from achieving the business outcomes defined by the business through this technology enablement. And I think one last thing, Jack, the success for an ERP specifically, it would be identifying what are you going to change? Are we putting a newer ERP system in? Are we adding an additional module? Whatever it is that we're doing with our ERP For me, the value comes from getting it to production. That's it. If you don't get it to production, it's all time, effort, money, you know, stress. And ultimately, the value is getting it to production.
That's a really great explanation, Russ. I really appreciate that. You hit on a couple of good points, and I like your idea around the random pathways. And are random pathways connected to the business goals and objectives? And I think that you need a tactical way to ensure this. You know, you start with a strategic vision and drill down to the departmental level brass tacks. You know, it's not just a poster on a wall where you have your mission and goals and you share that with people. You really need to have a deliberate exercise and use a tactical tool and methodology to ensure that from a, you know, the individual projects within the IT department are aligned with the objectives and goals and missions of the organization. So I really appreciate that. That's a great point. So Russ, on that note, I'd like to share out a couple of articles that you published, and I thought they were well done. I'd like to share these out with our listeners, and I think they tie back to the first question as well. But one article is called "Good Intentions Don't Count, Systems in Production Do." You share various levels of successful assimilation, and the article states that, quote, "Why do some teams seem to make it to the end successfully? Other teams just make it to the end, and others never get the chance. Why are some teams on a continue high through the project, while the members of a team right across the hall seem to drag into work every morning? Does some secret formula exist to ensure success, or is it just a matter of luck?" End quote. What is your thought on success rates in general, whether IT or ERP projects?
Well, I'm in a long line of your podcast guests who've said the results are mixed. So you've got some companies and projects that are really amazing successes, and I know you've got testimonials around those. And then you've got other ones that are not so good, and you've got testimonials around those. A little bit of what we were doing with when we were writing that article that you're referencing was, okay, is there a pattern here? Is there some best practice here that can really help these, especially these very large ERP projects, to have a better chance of getting to production and being successful? And let me talk about that for a minute, a little bit of the findings of what might be useful for your listeners. But we ended up feeling and became strong advocates of having a full organizational team, and I'm not talking about just the team working in the project wearing the t-shirts, but even the supporting roles around the team and even the executives involved up and down the line. And really, we found that there's roles that need to be there. So if you're troubleshooting a project, and I get invited to do that every now and then, what I'll do is go try to find all these different roles and do they exist. So what are those roles? One would be, who's accountable for this thing? Someone who's ultimately accountable on the business side. In other words, if it fails, they're the ones that are going to take the heat for it. And also, who is it over on the technology side that's got the accountability? So you end up with this partnering going on between some business leader and also a technology leader, and they're both kind of in the boat together, and they're going to sink or swim together. So can I find those two people? That's kind of the first thing. Second is, and I feel like this is important too, and I feel like I was hearing it in your earlier guests, but having somebody involved in these, especially these very large expensive projects, who has already experienced success with the technology, experienced success with that kind of project, and who has already seen the finish line and what it feels like to flip the switch, turn it on, it's in production and in use. And what does that do? That gives a lot of confidence to the team. So the individual that's been there, done that, they've already seen the landmines, the issues, but kind of the things, the decisions that you have to make, that all those important things. I feel like having that person in the team is very important. That role often is done by a consultant, or it could be a vendor SME. But somebody who's already been there, seen success with whatever it is you're doing. Also, depending on the technology that you're doing, an SME around the technology, it doesn't have to be somebody that's done that work before, but it's somebody who understands the technology that's being employed to create the capability in the business. And also feel like the same thing needs to be in existence for the business. So an SME out of the business that knows in depth what it is that you're trying to achieve with this technology that you're implementing. And then I have one last kind of surprising thought for you. Maybe you don't hear this one very often. I like to find an optimist on the team, somebody who is maybe ridiculously optimistic about where this thing's going to be. They already seen the rainbows on the other side of the forest. But I also like for there to be a pessimist as a member of the team too. So somebody who can't see the rainbows, they're looking through the forest. they're seeing the bears and the wolves and the branches and the bugs and everything. But having those two, they have a great play on each other, right? You're being too optimistic or you're being too pessimistic. They kind of balance each other out. So for me, the bottom line on getting higher success rates is a little bit about how's this team made up and are all these roles being covered? Can one person cover more than one role? Yeah, I believe they can. But especially if you're using an agile approach, which most teams do now, I'm always looking to see, do I have all the roles covered? Can I identify all the roles? And if they're there, it's probably a better chance that this project's going to make it.
That's really great, Russ. I'm just going to summarize here quickly for our listeners.
Yep.
If I had to distill your response down, I would say it is strategic coalitions. You know, so the idea of strategic coalitions and, you know, you're all in the same boat together with the same objective and mission and goals and desires. So I think that's a great point. The second one, experience. You know, there's some who have experienced success and someone who has witnessed the finish line is a valuable idea because without them, organizations don't know what they don't know.
Absolutely.
Number three, understand the deployed technology and understanding the true differentiators in the various platforms. And so in our case, you know, we do a lot of ERP selections and there are certainly what we call true differentiators in many ways, but certainly from a technological perspective as well. So really understanding that technology and what's required to support and maintain and optimize that technology is crucial. Your fourth point, thoroughly understand the business and the business processes. I think that's a very important idea that really that yep. also takes some time and some commitment and alignment within the organization to really understand, you know, why do we have the processes we do? You know, how are those processes supported? Where's the opportunities to improve and optimize those processes? And then number five, I really love your fifth point, and I have to be honest, it's one that you don't hear very much, and that is the idea of within projects and within organizations, you need optimist and you need pessimist. And these are two very powerful influences, and they have a very important role to play in a project on both ends of that spectrum. And I believe that those in the ERP organizational change field need to really understand this a little better right. and also manage that relationship better. So even the pessimists have a positive role to play in IT and ERP projects. So great insight. Thank you. So Russ, my next question for you, and it actually is in regards to another article that I'd like to share with our listeners. And the name of your article was The Politics of Information and Projects. And I think the reality of it is there is politics involved. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. I mean, there's good and bad politics. And in politics, just like the relationship between the optimist and pessimist, it needs to be well understood, recognized, and managed. So there's certainly a place for politics, and it's just a natural part of any project. But sure. The article shares that, quote, information is political. Companies, departments, and individuals all have the potential to create different political structures to protect and control the management of their information assets, end quote. So Russ, can you tell me more on how this would play into ERP organizational change?
So Jack, what is it that people and organizations fear the most about technology change? And I know you're thinking about it, and that's what this podcast is about. But my take on it, and this is just years of looking at it and thinking, and how do you distill that up? And I think it's really their fear is that they're going to become incompetent for some period of time. And people and departments, for that matter, worry about getting back into their safety zone of competence. So that's just a normal thing with technology change, especially a big ERP. If you're replacing the whole guts of the company, there's a lot of risks there. And a lot of people are scared by the fact that my paycheck depends on the fact I've been sitting in this chair for 15 years and I know how to use this old system. And you know what? I sleep nights. And now you're going to take it away from me. So there really has to be thinking about countermeasures for organizational change. And when people own data or they own business processes or they own functionality of systems, they're going to defend their turf if they're not feeling like they're going to overcome that potential for incompetence. And so what are the countermeasures? The people that are the most impacted by things, they probably need to be the ones on the teams, right? Involved in the requirements definition, helping with the prototyping. That's very comforting for those people that are going to be using these new systems to be involved in the prototyping. And then also the testing. And for those that can't be involved, training. And I know sometimes teams and organizations will try to take shortcuts on training. They're not really doing themselves any favors because they're not doing the countermeasures for organizational change. And then I think another one would be the executive team needs to very clearly and very loudly and often express support for the mistakes that are going to happen and the adjustments that are going to have to be made. Yeah, we are going to find problems, but you know what? We're going to work our way through them. I'm going to be right there with you, supporting you. And yes, I realize there's going to be these challenging periods. One last comment, Jack. I personally like to have naysayers on the team. So if you're doing that big ERP project and you've got somebody out there who's grumbling about it and you're kind of sensing, wow, I'm really going to have trouble with this person. They're going to be the one that's going to be out there throwing rocks at us. I feel like having the naysayers on the team is a great countermeasure. They're probably going to be the ones that are going to have the most insights. They have a lot of ownership. They feel the most risk. And if you can flip them, especially if they're highly involved in the project, they become advocates. They become the ones that are out there selling everybody else instead of being the ones that are passive aggressive on the project. So I look for naysayers. That person over there seems like you're not embodying them for some reason. Why? maybe they should be on the team as well, because we're going to turn them into an advocate. Also, one last thing, I've always found that sometimes some of the best insights come from these team members that began as naysayers.
Well, thanks, Russ. I really like the points. Feeling incompetent for a period of time can certainly create disgruntled team members for sure. There's no doubt about it. And this is a real thing, especially on most sizable projects, that it's absolutely a real thing. And I think for this reason, you know, countermeasures can be deployed to help manage that. Mm-hmm. And one such countermeasures, from my view, is L&D. It's learning and development. And some of the principles and ideas behind effective L&D is crucial. And because it helps to teach employees how to get unstuck,
yes.
You know, how to get past that point that they're at and move forward.
Yep.
But I also think, as you'd mentioned, that, you know, communication is crucial. And we've talked quite a bit about that on previous, articles and podcasts. And there's a lot of great work around that idea. And, you know, certainly trust. I think that trust is important, because as you develop and improve trust, that you're really just advocating for success and you're letting people know that, you know, hey, we'll get through this. And,
right.
and being incompetent and, you know, in the short term is fine. You know, sometimes that's part of the process. And I think your last two points are absolutely crucial. And that is the idea of support for mistakes and manage failing is okay. And I think that sometimes that's an underemphasized value of success. You know, it is okay to have mistakes. It's not a matter of being perfect. It's a matter of how you respond to issues and concerns when they happen. That's being more realistic and honest about it. And so managed failing is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then your last point, you know, looking for naysayers, I think this ties back a little bit to the pessimist in the previous questions, but they do have a lot to offer in terms of just potential to the project, value add to the project. You know, they may be naysayers for a variety of reasons, but one of the main reasons is because they may see gaps. They may see gaps in the entire process and in the solution.
Yeah.
You know, you do need to sit down and have productive conversations with naysayers. naysayers and really just try to get to the bottom of it. You know, of course, sometimes, you know, naysayers, it's maybe in their personality or their character, you know, that's one thing. But unless you spend time, you know, with these folks and really try to understand kind of where they're coming from and try to meet them where they're at and try to get that helpful information, they do have a significant role to play in any project.
And the optimists sometimes don't see those gaps. So you need those gap fillers in there.
So Russ, what can you say about the birth of a systems project, whether it be IT and or ERP? That is, what can you share with our listeners about system vision? Is that one of the most important first steps?
Yeah. I'm fortunate because I've gotten to talk to a lot of pretty high level CEOs about how they run their companies and how they get their strategies together and that sort of thing. And contrary to maybe what people think, good strategy seems to come more often from a good process. So it's a discipline process of driving down, and you and I just talked our way through that. Rather than some person coming up with this brilliant light bulb idea and we all got to go do this brilliant thing. Most companies, they're more disciplined about it. They're more driving into the where they're going to invest their money and what where they're going to put their time, what kind of innovative things they're going to implement. So CEOs tend to, the more successful ones do this on a process basis more than just some brilliant genius thinking going on. But I would say the second thing is people that are working on these projects. And it could be the IT people, it could be the consultants, it could be the employees on the business side. It can even be the executives that are overseeing it. They want to be able to commit themselves to a vision that is bigger than maybe what they've ever done before, or something that feels like they're going to stretch and grow with it. And John Nesbitt, I don't know if you ever read the book called Reinventing the Corporation. He talks a lot about this idea of big ideas that people can feel like we're kind of on a crusade together here. We're going to do something really important. And this is kind of giving meaning to my participation in this project. And that's very important. But I would also say at the senior most levels, back to the idea of finding roles and trying to figure out if these projects have their pathways to success. The article that you mentioned, I wrote about three roles that I think you should try to find. So one is, who's sponsoring it? So somebody at the senior level's going to have to take this, and it's going to be out of their budget, and they're paying for it, right? They may not be the day-to-day person. They may sit in on steering meetings or that sort of thing, but maybe they're not that deeply involved, but they're the ones that are ultimately, it's coming out of their budget, or they're the ones that are accountable. So there's got to be a sponsor. Also, I feel like if a project's going to take a life and it's going to have a lot of support from the rank and file, there needs to be somebody championing the project. So Steve Jobs was really good at that, right? He really championed, we're going to create this new tablet or whatever. Jeff Bezos, really good about, we're going to create this additional e-functionality, or, hey, we're going to go out and create AWS and actually sell our server capacity. So somebody that's really, they are the vision setter. They're the ones getting everybody on board and kind of the cheerleader of it all. But I think there's also another role, and that's Jeff Bezos can't be involved in all that stuff either. So there needs to be others around the sponsors and champions who are advocates. Sometimes I'll ask on an ERP project, whoever is the team lead or the project manager, are you really an advocate for this? Or are you just doing this because this is your paycheck? Do you feel it in your bones that, you know, this thing really needs to be done? And are you excited by the vision of this business person who's helping you through? So can one person be all three? Sometimes, you know, if it's a smaller or medium-sized company, yes. But I think as the organization gets larger, you find it's more separated. So somebody's a champion, maybe there's a number of advocates, and maybe one or more sponsors. But I like to see all three in existence. And if one's not there, I get worried. It doesn't have all the success factors for traction.
Well, thanks for the insight, Russ. You know, strategy comes down to effectively managing process. No doubt about it. And there's also an element of belief that you can do it. And sometimes that takes some organizational alignment on that pretty important fact. But also, you know, disciplined and meaningful process requires management excellence. And you'd also just mentioned that you need to feel it in your bones. You know, with that, Russ, I'd like to share out more about an article called Management Excellence, Adjust the Size of Your Thinking. And that article states that, quote, belief is a powerful force. It is an essential component of successful systems development projects. What some system builders fail to realize, however, is that belief is a result of a conscious decision. The team leader must decide that the system will indeed exist, instill this belief in his or her heart, and then transfer the feeling to the other members of the team. Can you please explain more and maybe elaborate on how critical this is in the context of ERP organizational change?
Got it. There is an article. Maybe you'll put the link out for anybody. If somebody's made it to this point in the podcast, congratulations. We're glad to still have you. But there's an article that talks about big thinking managers and small thinking managers and kind of the characteristics of big thinking managers versus small thinking managers. And honestly, I think we could do an entire podcast just on that one article. There's so much in there. Maybe what I'll do is talk a minute about if you're doing these things, you may want to rethink your approach in these projects. But if you're a leader, and especially a leader of an ERP and an ERP technological change, and you're managing at an excruciating level of detail, that may be a problem, especially if you feel like you're the only one that knows how to get the team from point A to point B. And really what I've learned is if you empower team members, they generally will get to point B. They may not do it exactly the same way you would. They may not take the same pathway through the forest to get to those rainbows, but they will find their way to point B. And that's a trust thing. And number two, it helps them grow. So they learn and they do make mistakes. But generally, if you're managing excruciating level of detail, you're not letting people grow and you're not letting them make mistakes. And you really do need to be a little bit of more just, I'm here to solve your issues. But you got to communicate to me if you're having issues so that I can help you through them. But I think that's one of the number one things is the level of detail that you're managing. Also, sometimes I'll find that the ERP leaders are viewing this as an interesting technical problem. So it's like they're all around the technology of it and they've lost sight of the business. What's the point? You know, you're trying to get to a business outcome. So keeping your eye on the ball, right? We've got to hit these business outcomes and make sure these requirements are aligned. I would say that's another one. There's a whole lot more in that article. A lot of good things to think about.
Yeah, that's a great article, Russ. I appreciate it. And again, we'll have the name of the article is Management Excellence, Adjust the Size of Your Thinking. And we'll certainly have that link in our show notes as well. So, Russ, my next question is maybe just from a high level, if you can share some of the critical success factors.
You got
it. What are your thoughts? What would you say are the most critical components of building an effective IT strategic business and technology roadmap?
I feel like we touched on that in the earlier questions. So I would summarize it as start with the vision and mission and take it to the outcomes. And generally, I like to see outcomes that are measurable. So this system exists by this date, or this capability can process this many transactions, or this new component is going to handle X amount of customer requests. So there's something there that the business can connect with as far as the outcome. And then that turns into what actions are we going to do to make these outcomes happen? And as I said before, business does some stuff, technologists do some stuff. And kind of the last piece, the last part of this chain is creating the projects to do those actions. So you can combine some of the actions together. And then now we got a project. That's what I would expect to see on a project management office, a PMO list, is something that's come through that chain. One last thing, I see sometimes this being done on a balanced scorecard or a SWOT, if you know those two techniques. I personally like, it's called strategy on a page, that technique, which is a little bit more what I've been describing, strategy on a page.
Russ, I do want to pick your brain a little more on the idea of true differentiators with solutions and vendors.
Okay.
And I do think that the reason the selection process is critical is that every organization has unique business models and structures. And as a matter of course in design, ERP systems vary greatly and IT systems and can impose a specific business model, structure, and approach on a company's strategy. So when it comes to ERP selection, what is the general process for properly identifying the business requirements to be included in an RFP?
Jack, I think there's good news in this front. So that's something that we've been struggling with forever, right? Which one of these systems, A, B, C, or D, is going to be the one that's going to be the right one for our business? And it's very complex. And there's been a little bit of divergence from the holistic model. A lot of companies that I end up visiting are doing best of breed software as a service. I'm sure you see that yourself. And that creates this big problem of integrating everything and which one's the data that really takes precedence, all that sort of thing. I feel like the vendors have a handle on it. So what I'm seeing lately, and let me begin by saying, I advocate using some kind of a rationalization framework for making these choices. And personally, the teams I work on, we still just use old-fashioned spreadsheets and requirements and all the different features and then check marks, right? So we end up with these gigantic spreadsheets looking at each vendor. But the vendors have caught on to that. So the good news is they're building their offerings with a lot of choice. Not only that, but they also have tiered pricing. So they're figuring out, they're getting very good at hitting organizational sweet spots for their offerings. So if you're a small company, you only need this much. If you're medium, you need this much. If you're in this industry, you need these features. So they're making a little bit more of a menu-based and also pricing-based on what you pick and what you pick to use and what you pick to leave behind. Not only that, but some products, for example, QuickBooks or NetSuite, a few of them will make suggestions real time. We notice that you keep stopping and you're going off and doing some process outside of our system. Do you know that we have a module for that? And that would save you a lot of time if you use it. So it's almost like AI may play a bigger role in some of these SaaS offerings to make suggestions on. It's almost like having a little consultant in there. You ought to be using this feature. Maybe you don't know about it yet, but you ought to take a look at that. So there's a metamorphosis going on with these SaaS offerings, and you can price, and it's a lot more competitive, and they're really bundling things so that it is more matchable, you know, to what your requirements may be. It's also become a lot more complicated. I recommend having some consultants, especially the ones that have been there and done that, to help you in this process.
Yeah, thanks, Russ. Good points. You know, we talk about quite a bit and with previous guests, the idea of managing not just technology, but the ERP organizational change consists of the triad, you know, the people, the processes, and the technology. And I think those are all, you know, pretty crucial. I would say from a high level, those are the highest level categories, I would say, of successful ERP organizational change. And then each one of those consists of many, many different sub-influences. And one of the things that's fascinating for me is with that triad and the technical piece is where will emerging technologies take us, and including AI, and how will that impact the other two influences of the triad, the people and the processes? You know, and how can and will technology be used to make up for disconnects and gaps in organizational challenges, you know, the people component, you know, the challenges and gaps there, as well as the process challenges. You know, how far will technology go to help us address some of the gaps? So I think more to come on that. We have several guests lined up where we're talking very specifically about that idea. So keep posted, listeners, for more on that idea. You know, and I think, Russ, with the ERP vendors as well, there really are different differentiators within their product and their services. And some try to be everything to everybody, and they try to cater and develop their product so that you can dial and tune and configure. And some are very specific to a niche with maybe less ability for customization. But they all also have different implementation methodologies. You know, the way they go to market, they are software companies and they do implementations as as well, but they definitely have different implementation approaches, and they also market and brand those approaches. I mean, they literally have specific names for their implementation methodology, and then they brand based on that. So I think that they have, you know, caught on to the idea that selection is important, and they should understand that. And so I think as such, over the years, they've definitely catered their marketing and their branding to the selection process specifically. So, you know, it's not just a matter of the features and functions. You know, all ERP systems do, you know, AR and they do AP, and they do it differently. That's important for our listeners to note, is that the way that one system perhaps does AR or AP or warehouse management, you know, many ERP vendors provide those features and those functions, but the way in which they do that matters. And I think it's up to the organizations to really flesh that out.
Right.
But yeah, you know, it's all about the features and the functions, but it's also about the implementation methodologies. And I think that the ERP vendors here, just you know, over the last few years, they realize the importance of selling their product and being able to convince the organizations of their methodology.
Yeah,
so they have spent time and effort and money to market and brand their approach. So Russ, thank you so much for your time today. What a fun conversation. We could certainly go on for hours. There's no doubt about it. But before I let you go, just one last question. As fellow practitioners, we absolutely benefit from learning from our colleagues and friends, both boots on the ground as well as researchers. But what would you say, how would you distill down this conversation? You know, and as you'd mentioned previously, that a lot of your students, when you cut them loose into the real world, they go into the ERP consulting business. How would you summarize this conversation for them today and for our listeners, and leave us with that one golden nugget of advice?
I would say start with the vision and business outcomes. I mean, that's the starting point for all of this. Make sure that you're finding the business champions and the advocates and the sponsors and who's going to play those roles. The teams that are going to work on, especially thinking about very large efforts, make sure that you're building a diverse and balanced between the factors that we talked about earlier, and a complete team with all of the roles that I mentioned earlier. I like your point about sharing the vision and benefits widely and communicating that widely. I feel like that should be part of this summary. And then the last thing is commit that this thing's going to get to production. It's going to go live because ultimately that's where the value is.
Great insight. So true. Russ, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, and your dedication to our trade and the field, and your dedication to teaching. Thank you so much. For our listeners, please check out www.itmweb.com. And Russ, can you please tell our listeners more on how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. Well, number one, if somebody's still listening, thank you. Thank you very much for listening all the way through this. It's been fun, Jack. A fun conversation. LinkedIn, it's Russ Finney, RussFinney. That's always the best place probably to find me. And then I'm very active on Twitter. So a lot of research or insights. I try to do something every day out of my teaching or consulting or any of this that we're talking about. So I try to put a couple of dog treats, if you will, on social media every day. And that keeps them coming back. And anyway, that on Twitter is rfinney, R-F-I-N-N-E-Y.
Russ, thank you very much. And we'll share that out on our podcast show notes as well.
Great.
Thanks again, Russ. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to. And we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP, organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, #TheERPOCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.